Oh, yes, crispy, crunchy, and nutritious. That's right. This is the Sixers Talk Podcast. So glad you could join us. Danny Pommels, along with Noah Levick, super producer Ben Berry, waiting in the wings. We have a special guest joining us. It is Ty Johnson from Sixers Outsiders. You've been listening to him all week on the Mike Missanelli show, filling in for Mike, as well as his producer duties. You know, he wears a lot of hats. He's a very talented guy. Ty, we appreciate you joining us here on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's dive right in, gentlemen, and we will start with a little bit of home cooking, because Noah Levick has a fantastic article up on the website, NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com, on just targets for the 76ers for the mid-level exception. We will get into a little bit of the Olympic chatter with Team USA and Matisse Thybulle, and how that might affect how things play out for the gold medals, the medals, gold, silver, and otherwise. And we'll talk a little bit about just how things are progressing for next season and what we expect and what might happen. But let's talk this mid-level exception stuff, because the Sixers are scratching at the door of the luxury tax. They'll probably be there once again, which is where this mid-level exception comes in. It's a thing where it's kind of like you're spending above the luxury tax, but still struggling to make it deep into the postseason. So it's kind of like six of one, half dozen of the other for the Sixers. But Noah, you did a great job outlining a half dozen guys that the team is looking at. I'll start with you. Is there someone that you are most intrigued by, or maybe two or three guys who really stand out among the potential characters the Sixers could look at?
Yeah, thank you for the kind words. Yeah, just we don't know 100% for sure that they'll be over the luxury tax, but I think that is the expectation, given that they've committed so much money to Simmons, Embiid, and Harris, over $100 million. I mean, I guess in light of the Bucks clinching the championship, Bobby Portis is certainly, to me, an attractive name, both because of the skill set, a guy who can play the four and the five, and then also some of that toughness and attitude that maybe the Sixers have lacked at times. I think personally, he's someone who could bring that to the table. But of course, with all these guys, you're not 100% sure what their market's going to be. With Portis, you'd assume he'd like the idea of returning to Milwaukee potentially. Another interesting name that I included in there was Reggie Bullock, who the New York Times, or New York Post rather, actually reported yesterday, has drawn interest from the Sixers in addition to the Celtics and the Lakers. For me, he's a guy who's really intriguing if they end up losing Danny Green and or Furkan Korkmaz, just because he gives you that high level 3-point shooting, was at 41% last year, also is a decent defender, and I think someone who just can plug in really well in any situation. And was a good starter for a Knicks team that was one of the pleasant surprises of the NBA that last season. So those are a couple of names that come to mind for me as potential targets. But it's interesting because the Sixers had this same option on the table last year, and Daryl Morey figured, okay, I'll go into the season and maybe that gives me a little leg up in the buyout market because I still have the mid-level,
Todd shaking his head.
And he never saw fit to use it, which obviously did not pan out for the Sixers. So I imagine this year, if an opportunity presents itself and one of these sorts of players is available, that Morey will be a little more aggressive and might not hold on to it into the season.
Both of those guys serve two different skill sets for the Sixers. Obviously, Bobby Portis will be filling that void by Dwight Howard and providing some shooting at that position and versatility at both of the front court positions. Reggie Bullock obviously serving another need the Sixers have of shooting on the perimeter. Do you feel like one of those is more important than the other, Ty, or are you looking at both of those things as equally as important?
For me, I thought they badly needed a stretch big in the playoffs. I'm projecting, assuming Thybulle's here, we don't know what's going to happen in this offseason if there's a trade or something like that. But if Thybulle comes back, I kind of think he could sort of fit that Danny Green role. At least we hope he can grow to fill that role.
We'll dive into that a little bit soon.
Yeah. So with that, I'm looking at Portis would make a lot of sense. For some reason, just a gut would tell me that somebody's going to try to overpay him. Not necessarily because he deserves it, because I think he fit that role really perfect with the Bucks. And even though, as you mentioned in your story, Noah, he was a did not play coach's decision for some games in the playoffs because he can't play against everybody. I think there's a team that's under the cap that probably will end up overpaying him. I could be completely wrong. It's just a gut feeling. That's why Kelly Olynyk would be interesting to me. I kind of despise him just as with the Celtics and the way he plays and the Heat, but he can make an outside three. In a pinch, you probably could play him with Joel Embiid some, which you couldn't do with Dwight Howard, and obviously he can be your backup five. I think Olynyk would do a lot of the same things as Bobby Portis, and he is a scrappy type of tough guy. He's been on some decent organizations. I actually think he would make a lot of sense for them for what they needed. I truly believe, in addition to a bunch of other issues in that Hawks series, if they had a stretch big that could play behind Embiid for just a couple minutes, they win the series.
Yeah, I think Bobby Portis, I don't even know if they'll be able to afford him. I could see him being a guy that just they get outpriced trying to pursue. Doug McDermott, though, was a guy that a couple of weeks ago there was some speculation that I forgot where the report came from, that Sixers were targeting him here in the offseason. If you watched any of the Pacers games when the Sixers played them, he gave the Sixers hell a few times, shooting-wise and just coming in and being instant offense. I think Doug McDermott's age is intriguing to me because he's still on this side of 30, and he has an opportunity to maybe grow into just a specific shooter's role that maybe they projected Furkan Korkmaz could be off the bench. But I think the Sixers have a situation where, you know, you got other guys that Noah listed in his article, like Patty Mills. You know, I think they're in a situation where they need the service, the ability to create and shoot. If they can find a guy that can do both of those things, then that's great. But they probably are going to have to either hope someone like Matisse or Tyrese Maxey or someone takes a step forward, and then they can decide, you know, who fills that void that's left behind by, you know, the shooting, the need for shooting or the need for, you know, people who can create off the dribble. So if you're looking at, you know, guys who fill that void, I'm with Noah. I think Reggie Bullock really intrigues me by the fact that he can be versatile defensively and shoots a terrific clip from outside. I just don't want the Sixers to be in a situation where, you know, I like Morey's approach of playing the cards close to the vest and then, you know, holding out hope that something develops that, hey, you know what, this is a feather in our cap that we can, like, you know, offer more money than maybe another team could to, you know, these potential buyout guys. But it, like Noah said, it didn't come to fruition. But I'm leaning Reggie Bullock. I like Doug McDermott. We saw Patty Mills giving Team USA, you know, hell and have seen, you know, him be prolific the Spurs and the NBA as well. So that's just an intriguing name. You know, probably a little bit of the Danny Green issue where, you know, you're a year older with Patty Mills, you know, next season, a year older with Danny Green, you're kind of maybe want to get out before they hit that, you know, over the hill moment. But I think shooting and, you know, the Embiid, you know, they found a diamond in the rough with Tony Bradley, and he was able to provide some of that backup, you know, stretch for, you know, versatility that they needed in the front court. So maybe I think that need can be serviced maybe without the MLE, and I'm leaning toward them probably going shooting or a perimeter player with the mid-level exception. That's what I think would be smart.
Makes sense to me. Yeah, just a little funny Kelly Olynyk story that came to mind as Tyrone was talking. Back in the 2018 playoffs, you know, pre-COVID, we were loud in the locker rooms. Still clearly remember, I talked with him a little one-on-one in the locker room before a game, and he looks me dead in the eyes, you know, this random reporter from another city, and says, "Enjoy the game." So I said, "Well, I'll do my best, man."
Right.
That always stuck with me. Is very distinct. I mean, it seemed, you know, genuine to me.
Was his hair down or was it man bun ready? What was the hair doing?
I think his hair was down. Yeah, it was very unexpected.
That's a little intimidating. The 6'10 dude like, staring down.
Was he threatening you to enjoy the game? Like, you better enjoy the game?
You better enjoy the game.
It was very, very emphatic, so I didn't know how to interpret it. I took the generous interpretation of he was just being kind and is the sort of guy who, you know, wanted me to have the best night possible. So I thought that was interesting. But as a player, I know probably something Sixers fans don't want to have on their mind now, but the reality is in backup centers, the best fit with Ben Simmons is a guy who can shoot and is a guy who can pass. And those are two things that Kelly Olynyk does at a pretty high level. Obviously, there's the concern there that maybe some of the production in Houston is fool's gold because it's coming with the higher usage and on a rebuilding team. But I think the track record on good teams in Boston and on Miami indicates he is a good player. And for the taxpayer mid-level, that's probably a decent price. And whether or not Ben Simmons is on the team, it's probably a decent fit. So I agree that, you know, he's a guy who might be worth pursuing here, but it's really tough to tell at this stage how much all of these guys are going to get paid and what exactly the market will look like. I imagine maybe we do see a little more spending this offseason and more quote unquote overpays just because there's now a little more stability from a COVID front. Like, I don't think the league is as concerned about its long-term viability now that there's a widely distributed vaccine. So I'm interested to see how all that plays out.
The Patty Mills thing that you brought up, a lot of that to me, George Hill's future, I know his contract's only partially guaranteed, that's going to play a role. Whoever, whether it's Ben Simmons, if it is him, if it's not him, plus Hill, plus Mills might at some point get a bit redundant. I don't know if you need both of them. Not that Patty Mills can ever hurt you, but if you're parting with Hill, I think he still would make a lot of sense. And I don't think the Sixers would need him to be, I don't think he has to be great here. I think he would just have to do the things he's always done, which is play well in the fourth quarter, handle the ball really well, and do a lot of that leadership stuff that this team absolutely could need, especially since you never know how Maxey projects. I think he's going to be a really good player, but he's not a really good player yet. And we know Mills has been a really good player for a while.
Where are you guys at with Dwight Howard? Because aside from the shenanigans, the energy he brought, you have to replace that if you don't bring Dwight Howard back. And there was also the intensity and tenacity and, you know, the no-nonsense approach that he brought. Kelly Olynyk could bring some of that in the front court regard. You know, Bobby Portis, you know, there's a meme going around of, like, the, you know, the emoji of just the raised eyebrows and then, like, his just a circle black beard painted on with a headband and it's like Bobby Portis. It's pretty funny if you haven't seen it. But he could bring a little bit of that. And, you know, he likes to, you know, force the issue a bit underneath and kind of get the crowd involved. That, do you think that is something that they'll need to replace if they do part ways with Dwight Howard and bring someone else in?
I would say ideally, yes. You know, ultimately the skill is most important, but I think Mike Scott was probably where they were hoping a lot of that grit and toughness would come from. And while I think he was probably more valuable than the average fan realizes, just mentoring young guys and being someone that people love talking to behind the scenes and all that, the reality is he wasn't doing it in an on-court role in the playoffs. And that would have been nice to have. And so, yeah, no, absolutely would be a nice component to bring to the team. And I think also ideally that's something that you like your star players to have in high supply. So that's also worth considering.
Yeah, I personally, if I was in charge, I would thank him for what he did this year, but I would move on and try to get a different skill set at that particular position, just because I think in the playoffs, he ended up being a net negative more than a net positive in the playoffs. Although he did have a really good regular season. But we know with the Sixers, we're kind of almost not even paying attention to regular seasons anymore. They've backed themselves in this position now where it's basically, what are you doing in the postseason or we don't care. And I don't think he has the ability to help this team in that spot. So I would part ways with Dwight Howard if I was in charge.
Yeah, it's interesting. The other guy I think we didn't mention on this list is another where you might run into those, some of those same concerns of like not really being well suited for certain matchups, and that's Montrezl Harrell. Obviously, like a better player than Dwight Howard right now, a former Sixth Man of the Year, who's an excellent, efficient scorer, but he played under 40 minutes in the first round against the Suns because the Lakers didn't trust him to guard most centers, such as a DeAndre Ayton. But I thought that was a name with some potential just because of the connections that you can draw with him being a former Daryl Morey pick and having the best years of his career under Doc Rivers. Dwight Howard, I think if it's for the veteran minimum and the Sixers feel confident that they have other legit backup center options, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world, but I'm on the same page with you that they can't be relying on him in the playoffs yet again.
And to that point, you know, you got guys like Montrezl Harrell, Dwight Howard. You mentioned in the article, according to Cleaning the Glass, the Sixers were 26th in three-point frequency. Like, they have to find other ways to get scoring from the perimeter. And, you know, Montrezl Harrell isn't necessarily going to give you that stretch aspect. Neither is Dwight Howard, obviously, where Kelly Olynyk does. You know, Bobby Portis does. I think, you know, shooting 47% from three isn't something you can expect from him next season. But at the same time, you know, just a player that checks more boxes and gives you more contribution than maybe you got from Dwight Howard, where last season he did serve a great purpose and was a great bridge to where we are now. But I think you have to look for ways to kind of keep up with these other teams who are very deep and very versatile. And you have to find players who fit that mold.
And that's what you'd expect from Daryl Morey, who's always been an ahead of the curve sort of guy as far as threes and layups and free throws being the most efficient shots in the game and wanting a team that reflects that. And look, he's only been here 1 year, and this is his second offseason and a good opportunity to build a team that is a modern NBA squad. So, I'm on the same page and would expect him to work that way this offseason.
The one night when the whole world comes together, the world's biggest show on the world's biggest stage, the opening ceremony of the Tokyo Olympics, Friday, 7:30 Eastern on NBC.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, it was one of my favorite events, my favorite times of the year. The Summer Olympics are here. Friday at 7:30, NBC kicks it off with the opening ceremonies. Make sure you check that out. Some of the games have already started. Softball, as well as women's soccer, is underway. Sunday, Saturday, there's a game, one basketball game. Sunday is when the main slate gets started, Group A, Group B. Team USA facing France in Group A at 8 a.m. So pancakes and hoops, I mean, there are worse things in the world than that. But if you're really feeling froggy, Ty Johnson, Noah Levick, if you're feeling froggy and want to leap at 4:20 a.m., Team Australia and Nigeria get it on in Group B. Featuring our guy, Matisse Thybulle, as well as Patty Mills, a guy we just mentioned in the mid-level exception conversation. You had to like what you saw from Matisse in against Team USA in the exhibition, getting opportunities to go one-on-one with these star players, one-on-one defensively is what I'm saying, and guarding them on the defensive end. as well as the confidence you've seen Matisse exude in that game. So it's just something worth keeping an eye on, particularly as it pertains to how he comes into training camp in September. This dude, man, it's not even worth talking about his numbers from last year. Obviously, he was second team all defense, but we could see a colossal leap forward from this guy. And Ty, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier, although it was just a passing comment. He could be the reason why Danny Green is expendable. I mean, when you talk about a guy who you will hope Matisse can turn into, would be a Danny Green type of player. I mean, maybe his ceiling is even higher considering the bounce he has and the quickness and things like that. But a great role model for a 3-and-D type of player for Matisse to model himself after. And here entering his third season, you're hoping he takes strides, hoping he takes a step forward. And I think this high level of competition, you know, playing on a team where he's getting starter type minutes and is starting games, it just could be the perfect formula for him to suddenly step up and they'd be like, whoa, like who is this guy when he steps in the training camp in September? I mean, y'all feel me on that or not?
No. Yeah, I do in a big way, actually. I think it has to happen if it's going to happen for him. And the reason I say this is we know the defense. You mentioned it, second team all defense. He's as good as anybody as a wing defender.
You're saying it has to happen this year? You're saying this is the time?
I think that if it's going to happen and he's going to become the reliable shooter, because that's the elephant in the room, is the question right. Is there were times where he was very playable, obviously always defensively, but made himself unplayable at times offensively. And if he can't make, and you're talking about Danny Green, he led the league in corner threes, partially because he hunts them, partially because he's really good at them. And Ben Simmons helps create those shots. Well, every offense is designed to get those shots. And if you're a player who doesn't really create, you mentioned in the first segment, the lack of creation on this team, that's not really his bag and it doesn't need to be. But making shots to be able to play him the minutes that you want to play him is just gigantic. And I think playing in a game, and then people realize a lot of guys have really good seasons after Olympic years because you also have, you mentioned the high level of games. Then you're working on the side with different coaches, with a different set of eyes, working on different things. If he can just make himself slightly above NBA average from three versus the 30% he shot for a good chunk of the season last year, totally different basketball player. And now you have a guy who can really, you can't take off the floor. But if he doesn't make the three ball coming up, at what point am I supposed to expect him to be a reliable enough shooter to where I can say, okay, is he just a nice piece or is he really a starter? Because if he doesn't make the three ball, personally, I don't think he could be a starter in the league. If he does, he absolutely can be an extremely valuable starter in this league.
Yeah, no, I'm on the same page. The catch and shoot threes have always been the most important thing for him offensively. I also think we saw little glimpses of development this season with being able to attack an occasional closeout and get to the rim, some high-flying finishes in transition, developing a little bit as a cutter because he was often the guy that teams would double-team off, you know, when he was playing alongside Joel Embiid. So I think some of those peripheral skills are also important for him to continue making strides on. But, yeah, ultimately is the shot going to be, you know, good enough that he can play starters' minutes? I think it's still an open question. I don't think there's anything horribly wrong with his form. I think for him, it often just comes down to rhythm and having his legs under him. Something I even noticed early in his rookie season, like at rookie minicamp. If he has his legs under him, the shot looks really good. If he doesn't, it's unreliable. So I think that's ultimately kind of the key for him. And then just can he be dependable in that role? I think, yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I kind of, heading into this offseason, I'm almost thinking of like Korkmaz and Green as in that same category of your team's wing shooters. And the question is just how much of that are you going to lose? If they lose both of those guys, then I think the burden on Thibault to make threes becomes even a little bit higher, especially since, as we mentioned, this was a bottom five team in three-point frequency. So regardless of how much they bring back in terms of their in-house free agents, who they add, Matisse Thybulle and three-point shot is a huge storyline heading into next season.
And then on top of that, I think the defense we already have seen, we want the three to come along to fit that mold. There's no in-between game. There's nothing – there's he can dunk an alley-oop, but there's no put it on the floor. There's no floater. There's no pull-up jumper. There's nothing in between the dunking and layups and the three-point shooting. So I think he knows that there he has to make strides there, and he knows that there's an opportunity for him as well, considering, you know, the Furkan situation, considering the Danny Green situation. So, you know, if we mentioned it before, but if you haven't been paying attention to his YouTube page, I mean, he does that really well as well. So check that stuff out as he goes through Tokyo. But I think for a kid like Matisse Thybulle, and who you know he really wants to succeed and really wants to make an impact here and be a difference maker, and kind of be a part of that. But if you got him on the floor with Ben Simmons and, God forbid, Dwight Howard, like, forget about it. Like, you're not getting any type of offensive production that you would like from him. But I feel like the way, you know, Ty mentioned working with other coaches and things like that, just being around another set of guys as well, you know, with Patty Mills and Andrew Bogut, just guys who have been around the block and have won championships and, you know, deep playoff runs with Joe Ingles and just people who have experienced the success and aren't in this, you know, Petri dish that's Philadelphia and whatnot. Like, he gets that experience and develops there and brings that with him to training camp. I think it just – I'm looking for a lot. You know, you mentioned it's a big, you know, storyline heading this next year, just a three-point shot. His development period is really intriguing to me. But I want to ask you guys this. Are you okay if he's a throw-in to a Ben Simmons trade in order to facilitate a better player or a better fit here for the Philadelphia 76ers?
See, that's tough for me. But to be honest with you, if I'm getting back a superstar –
all right, we got to go names. Who outside of Lillard?
Outside of Lillard?
Well, yeah, I mean, Lillard is – I pretty much – whoever's going to get him is going to have to give up a King's ransom. Yeah. So.
I'm not doing it if it's like that Indiana trade where you can get right. Like Caris LeVert and Brogdon and a pick. No, I'm not including him in that trade most likely.
You wouldn't.
I would not.
Probably, I like Caris LeVert a lot.
I like Caris LeVert, a wing scorer. This team badly needs a wing scorer as well. And he can do some of that in-between game stuff that you mentioned, and he also can create on his own. I personally would prefer in that situation, since Brogdon is a point guard, to include Maxey in that trade. If it was up to me, if I'm the GM, and I'll see if they would be okay with it. But that's what I would prefer. I would prefer to only part with him in any star trade if Beal became available. Any star trade, I'm trading any role player I have to trade to get that star player and let Morey figure it out later. I don't want
but your value on Matisse over Maxey is where you're at.
Because I think because of the extra year and because I envision a point guard coming back and I can probably live with George Hill if I had to, that's why I would prefer it. I think the wing is where they're thin. That was one of my concerns if they pulled off a Lowry trade where it was rumored Green and Thybulle in it. I think they're thin on the wings. So, and I think they're thinner on the wings. And that's why personally I value him higher, but if for a star, I would part with him, but I don't want to part with him for less than a star if I can help it.
Yeah, you'd assume in a Lillard or likely a Beal trade, both Maxey and Thybulle would be on the move. I think also worth considering Simmons and Thybulle were the Sixers' two best defenders on opposing stars this postseason, and for the foreseeable future, Matisse Thybulle as a Sixer will be guarding the Kevin Durants of the world, will be guarding the Trae Youngs of the world. And that's a pretty significant loss, especially as you said, Ty, for a team where the entire mindset is how do we win postseason games and how do we finally get beyond the second round? Whether or not Thybulle improves as a three-point shooter, he helps you do that by guarding the other team's best player. And especially if you lose Ben Simmons, the defensive player of the year runner-up, that's another really huge loss on the defensive end if you're parting with Thybulle. So yeah, you got to draw a line at some point. And you imagine that Thybul would have to go for someone like a Lillard, but below that, yeah, I'd be really reluctant to part with the defender that's as great as he is at 24 years old.
Yeah, man. 8 starts last season for Matisse. Are you guys of the ilk that's going to double, triple, quadruple next season? Where do you see his role? We're talking about a leap forward. Is he a starter in your perfect world, or is he coming off the bench still?
In my perfect world, he's a starter because he improves his 3-point shot enough to validate it. Like you mentioned, in between, Danny Green didn't really do a lot of in between, and that's fine as long as you're making enough 3-point shots. Because in a world where Ben Simmons is still here, you need to create all the space in the world that you can. So I'm envisioning him, unless they make another move, him as a starter replacing Danny Green, at least for now. And then maybe to anybody that they got, if they added Bullock or somebody, maybe that person ends up playing behind him. Not sure, but that's more where my mind is at with him, as is pending other moves. And they're limited, as you mentioned in the beginning, you guys both mentioned in the beginning, due to the cap. There's but so many moves they can actually make.
What's your best case scenario, Noah?
For this offseason?
Just Matisse-wise. If he started 8 games last year, how do you see that playing out next year?
I think it all depends on whether Green's still on the team. I think you do have to realize the Sixers starting lineup, both in the regular season and then also in the playoffs before Green got hurt, they were among the best in the league. They were outscoring opponents by massive margins and rarely losing games when their whole starting five was healthy. So sure, Danny Green's a year older, but it's a tricky situation to imagine Thybul replacing him. Like, I think he'd need to do a lot to, at least in Doc Rivers' eyes, be worthy of taking the spot of this veteran guy who's won multiple titles. If Danny Green's elsewhere, yeah, I think absolutely the best case scenario was that Thybul is a starter and continues to make strides offensively while being elite defensively. So yeah, I'm on the same page with that for sure.
Check him out, 4:20 a.m. Sunday. I don't know if that's Sunday morning or Saturday night for some people out there. for those who are a bit younger, I, those days of mine are gone. But maybe Noah. Noah, he's kind of an all-nighter type of guy. I can see Noah staying up, just pulling through. But you stay up for the 4:20 game for Australia, Nigeria. You just slide right into France and USA at 8 a.m. So. We will be watching, checking it out, and you can catch all the highlights and all the details on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com and on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Ready to make a move? A Wilmington University education can take you where you want to go. WilmU works online or in person. Learn more at wilmu.edu.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey, we got a lot coming up here on the Sixers Talk podcast. Monday, we will be all in with the draft. Of course, that's creeping up on us here on the 29th. We'll be all in on draft talk. We have an expert coming in and do a little bit of discussion there. We have free agency coming up first week of August, training camps in September. The season starts in October. A lot going on. We'll be with you every step of the way. I think what we're going to do now is just kind of feel things out from our own perspective on what we think will be ideal for the Sixers this offseason and what we actually expect will happen. So I'll go first, where I kind of touched on it earlier. Ideally, the Sixers will upgrade their perimeter shooting. We mentioned their 26 and 3-point frequency last season, according to Cleaning the Glass. They will improve their shooting and get more guys who can create off the dribble. Now, there's guys out there I like in free agency. I like Will Barton. I like Norman Powell. Will they be able to afford those guys in free agency? Probably not. But those are the type of skill sets I think that the Sixers could use. I expect Ben Simmons to be traded. And let's get that out there, because I don't think that they can come back and start the season with the way they ended it last year and still claim to be trying to improve. Ben doesn't bring the dynamic that they need to compete with the other teams who are vying for the championship in the Eastern Conference. And I think bringing him back would mean that they didn't quite get it done in the offseason. Of course, they have until the trade deadline next season to maybe move him or his stock changes or what have you. But I feel like the iron is hot based on all the reports that we've read and talked about, with the fact that, you know, around the league, his stock is he's still considered a marquee player. Maybe not at the Lillard level or maybe the Beal level, but he's still very worthy of an all-star player or a player that has made an all-NBA team like he has, or been an all-star like he has as well. So I just, not to belabor it, but I don't think he's back next year. So that would be my ideal offseason. We trade Ben, bring in an all-star caliber guard to improve the team, create more, get more shooters and creators, and then someone to back up Joel. That would be ideal. You guys can give your ideal, and then we do expectations. Is that how we're going to do it? And then we'll come back. Okay. So ideally, what do you think will happen, Noah?
That sounds good. Yeah. I think number one ideal is just simply find a way to get Damian Lillard.
Are you all in on that? That is your ideal?
You got there. Of course, there's some line, but as we alluded to earlier,
I just think the price is going to be too high. Not to interrupt you, I'm sorry, but I just think the price is going to be
high. But the Sixers are one of the teams out there that, on paper, have the best chance to land him. Ben Simmons and some good prospects and some picks, and it's hard to imagine another package that would be more enticing. Now we can get in, you know, into a little later as to how realistic that is, and
sure,
it seems that for the time being, what's most probable is Lillard starting next season on the Blazers. As he said himself, that's what he expects to be the case. But as far as ideal, I think that's it. And if you have a team with Damian Lillard and Joel Embiid, you're going to be a very attractive destination for all of the vet minimum, mid-level exception sort of guys out there. And you're going to be an automatic contender with that duo in place. Now, I think kind of going to plan B, what does that look like in a great world for the Sixers? I'm on the same page with you, Danny, if they need to improve the front court depth. And I think that includes both the 4 and 5 spots. Maybe they fill that with just one or two moves, if it's in Kelly Olynyk or Bobby Portis, but can't be just bringing Dwight Howard back and considering that sufficient. I think adding 3-point shooting, adding shot creation, and probably doing that, you know, somewhat via the draft, somewhat via free agency, as we've talked about a little on this podcast before, the recent draft track record is very strong. So in the event that the Sixers do keep the 28th pick, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. I think there's a chance they add a really high quality player with that pick, just based on the fact that you have gotten players like a Thybulle and a maxi, you know, in the 20s in recent years. So yeah, big picture for me, I think that would be a very good offseason for the Sixers. And I think a great, this team is a championship contender offseason. Really the only avenue where I would feel confident saying that is one where Damian Lillard becomes a Sixer.
And that's where I am. Ideally with me, it's him or bust. And as far as ideal, and in that scenario, after the Olympics, he talks to the general manager, and the general manager says, I don't know what you're talking about. I think this is a championship team. We just had to change coach, and Chauncey's going to solve everything. I hope that in that scenario, that would then anger because they already see, he already said on the record that he doesn't think they're just a coach away. So they don't make enough moves. And he says, you know what? I want out. And that means I want to go to the East, because he knows how hard it is to win in the West. And now once you say, I want to go to the East, it gets it all of a sudden, the suitors shrink by a wide margin. He then comes here for an exchange for Ben Simmons, Maxi, and 3 first round picks. And that would be the trade. And now you plug him in. You were able to keep Thybul. Talking about ideal. You're able to keep Thybul. And then what you do is, there's a player out there who's a free agent who's hurt in Oladipo. He sees Dame plus Embiid and thinks, I'm going to take a one-year prove I'm healthy deal. And he signs with the Sixers for the mid-level. And you get Oladipo instead of somebody else. And that's the ideal for me. You end up with a guy on a prove it. You get Dame, and then you can win a title. And this will be the first time Joel Embiid will actually play with a point guard who makes him better offensively and not worse. And then,
scenario.
And then the other thing is internal improvement. In that scenario, I would like to see one of either B-Ball Paul or Isaiah Joe really jump out. I think that they have intriguing players. We don't know when they'll be ready, but they're both intriguing. In a scenario where you have really, really good players around them, and you would obviously with Damian Lillard and Joel Embiid, one of those two guys takes a quantum leap. And we've seen it with Van Fleet and other guys. It's not impossible. And that's another thing that would be ideal. Great internal improvement from one or both of those guys. And I think it's not crazy to think one of them could make a big jump in year two.
Man, that's well said. Both of you guys went Lillard with the ideal. I just in my head, I just cannot see it happening. But that is a difference between ideal expectations. So Ty, I'm going to ask you to double down and give us your expectations of what you really think will happen next season. So we'll kind of do a snake here. We'll start with you, Noah, and then go back to me.
Expectations. I think it'll end up being closer to like that Pacers type of deal. I think they've probably come to the realization that you probably can't bring Ben Simmons back, and the fans just won't allow it. And it might not be.
Would you take McCollum? Would you take McCollum straight up?
Yeah, I wouldn't hate that trade. He has a certain skill set. I think that it's going to be a lesser trade, but I think they recognize that Ben Simmons can't come back. And also, I don't think Ben Simmons, judging from his offseason behavior, quite understands the city of Philadelphia somehow yet. And I think that's another thing that would contribute to him just not being able to come back, because I don't think he recognizes just how upset most Philadelphians are and how tough it would be for him to return the same. Like, I don't know if he really understands that. And that's another reason where they might have to decide for him that you just can't do it. It's a lesser trade like McCollum. And then they probably get a decent mid-level exception guy. It could be Bullock.
If you trade straight up for McCollum, you keep Matisse and Maxey. So
right. And you add another mid-level replacement guy, and you're different next year. And you may have a better fit as far as a better chance due to a better fit around your best player, but you're not going to win a title. And I think that's unfortunately the most realistic. We enter the season knowing, once again, there'll be maybe a top 3 seed in the East, but no real chance of winning a ring entering the season, pending another deal by Moore.
Yeah, it's tough to know for sure now, but it does seem probably more likely than not that Ben Simmons is on the move. I definitely don't think that is a guarantee by any means, but yeah, it seems like that's the path we're going down. We've talked on this podcast about how if it's not a star trade, it seems likely that takes the form of a three-team deal potentially, and wouldn't be shocking to me if that takes place on draft night, especially in light of how active Daryl Morey was on draft night last year. I think he gets in a flow and he's riffing, as he says, and he's just making calls and making franchise altering moves. And wouldn't be a shock to me at all if the Ben Simmons trade does go down here in exactly a week. And then outside of Simmons, my expectations are that the moves are heavily centered around shooting. That's Daryl Morey's MO. He recognizes that though they did make upgrades there last year with Curry and Green, they're still lagging behind the rest of the league just in terms of surrounding their dominant center with three-point shooters. They were still playing lineups last year where there were obvious guys for teams to double off and where there were reluctant shooters on the floor. And I think Morey sees that that just can't be the case next year. So absolutely, I think with the vet minimum, with the mid-level, that will be a high priority with the moves they make. I agree also that Morey will see that such a team is not quite a championship level yet, and he will hope to spring some sort of deal that puts them over the top in season. And to be fair, there are avenues to make that happen. If they re-sign Danny Green to a contract that is tradable, if they keep George Hill, you know, they guarantee that full contract, then you have some salaries that could be
tradable. Some expiring deals, right.
Could be tradable at the deadline. So that would be a decent path for Morey to take. It's not a home run off season, but it's one that I think could be on the table.
And put in perspective, last year to Sixers fans at least, the home run of an offseason almost pretty much was accomplished just by the fact that Al Horford wasn't on the team anymore. So, and you got to give Daryl Morey a lot of credit for finagling that when so many people didn't think that that was possible. So I encourage people out there who are listening and watching us, like, everything's on the table to a certain extent. Noah, you talked about the reluctant shooters on the floor, Ben Simmons being the face of the reluctant shooting that is on this team. I think my ideal and my expectation are more closely together, because I think that the Simmons trade happens. And like you said, and like we talked about on previous podcasts, I think it ends up being a three-team deal or multiple team deal, however many teams need to be involved. And the Sixers reap two players who change the dynamic of the team for Ben Simmons as the centerpiece. So what does that look like exactly? I don't know. Maybe it's a piece of the Indiana trade and maybe a piece of a trade with another team. So maybe you don't get, you know, Brogdon and LeVert. Maybe you just get LeVert and then you get another player from another team. And that's what you net for Ben Simmons. But if I'm Morey, I am headhunting a deal where I can get that high caliber all-star like CJ McCollum and not give up Maxey or Thybulle, just because it is the depth that is making, I mean, you look at the Hawks and their depth, they're able to overcome losing DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish and make the Eastern Conference Finals. The Bucks able to lose Dante DiVincenzo and win the whole thing. Like the depth, you look at the Nets, they lose Spencer Dinwiddie and are able to, you know what I'm saying? Like there's so much versatility and depth and interchangeability on so many of the other teams that the Sixers are trying to beat that the Sixers need to mimic that in their own organization. And they have so many glaring issues. And you talked about the fact that three-point shooting is one of Daryl Morey's, you know, calling cards. And Doc Rivers saying he doesn't care where the scoring comes from as long as, you know, it's there. Like that's out the window now. So I think, you know, we're more focused and honed in. And, you know, Ty is just, it's kind of, you mentioned earlier how suddenly we are so deep into this thing with the process and the words that come out of the front office's mouth and the coaches about success and, you know, trying to go star hunting and winning championships and things like that. The regular season doesn't even matter. The regular season doesn't even matter. It only, the only result from a fan's perspective, from a put up or shut up perspective, is what they do in the postseason. And it's a shame that we've gotten to that point, because there's so many, you know, part of the success is the journey. You know what I'm saying? So the journey should be appreciated and what it takes to get there. And the fact that, you know, for instance, you know, Kevin Durant's size 17 or whatever size he wears, you know, if he had wore 15, that would have been the end of the Bucks season. But somehow, you know, their storybook ending came together in a certain way. So I feel like the Sixers, there's going to be a lot that gets them to the championship, but I feel like they have to focus on being the best possible team they can from day one, instead of trying to tweak late in the season and bring in new faces and new bodies and try to upgrade that way. You know, the Bucks made that PJ Tucker trade, Drew Holiday trade. You know, those are just little tweak. Though the PJ Tucker trade was a little bit of a tweak. The Drew Holiday trade was done earlier in the season, and he was able to become a part of what they did, and just was just seamless. At, you know, late in the postseason, you know, he was as much of what they were as Giannis and Chris Middleton. So I'm against, you know, the waiting. I want to get everybody on the same page, of the same accord, in house, competing, you know, and driving and pushing each other from day one, rather than making the big trades late. So I'm looking for it all to happen soon, as in the next couple of months.
You know, but to your point you just said, though, the regular season wouldn't matter again if Ben Simmons doesn't come back, because now we're interested in how the new look team appears. It's mm-hmm. only if Ben Simmons returns where we say, you know what, we know he's good enough, because he's not a – we know he's good enough.
That's why I think he can't come back. You can't you can't do that. Like, you can't expect – what definition of insanity, right? Throwing the same thing out there, expecting different results. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but
– yeah, that, and that's the big thing. So I'm very intrigued by it. I do wonder, though, there is a trade that you would not accept for Ben Simmons. Like, obviously, you wouldn't make any trade. And I'm very interested in what his value truly is. Obviously, it's higher outside of Philadelphia than it is in Philadelphia. We're looking at the bottom barrel. Many fans look at him like he's a bum. We know he's not a bum. But I am interested in just what they could get. And we're not going to know, obviously, until the trade comes. Like, what do people in Cleveland? What do people in Indiana? What do people in Portland? What do people in Phoenix? What do other teams truly think about Ben Simmons right now? They have to have a higher opinion. But everything changes if he's gone. And then finally, we can't understate, Embiid took the leap that we were praying Simmons would. And when Simmons was anointed like the transcendent player in the next one, we thought it would be him that would be second in the MVP. Embiid took the leap, and Ben didn't leap with him. And Doc didn't leap with him either, if we're being honest, in the postseason. Maybe somebody can just take that leap with him after a trade. They get a player who maybe he's not a star right now. Maybe he is a lesser, but he's able to take that leap with Embiid, because it's just a shame to waste years like this.
Yeah, I will say, though it doesn't seem most probable right now, the regular season will be fascinating if, one, Ben Simmons is a Sixer, and two, he takes perimeter shots and whatever.
Oh, wow. What?
8% from the foul line. Not saying it's the most probable, but in terms of your point, Danny, that the regular season is boring in some ways to fans, I think regardless of how people feel now, a lot of folks would be drawn in if that were to be the case. Of course, it doesn't look like really right now, but, you know, out of all the possibilities on the table, that is one. It is a very interesting one, you know, if it were to come to be.
I think that's to Ty's point, though. I don't think he even gets it enough to be that guy. My reaction just now, hearing you say that, imagine if he actually was doing it. If he went out there and suddenly was just attempting and shooting and being aggressive, like that in and of itself would change the entire dynamic around him, right? I see you nodding your head, Ty. Like, I don't think he gets it.
I don't think he gets it. And it's just, I just don't personally think he fully understands how bad it's gotten. But in a scenario that Noah just laid out, where because of a lack of ability to make the trade that they want to make, they do bring him back. And if he was to actually come back different, well, first of all, both of our heads would explode. But then it would be very intriguing to watch him every night, because it's like, whoa. And we forget that as a rookie, I looked it up, he took more than a jumper per game, like 1.3 jumpers per game. And we thought that it would go 1.3, 2.3. And by now he'd be like a normal player. But if he can jump from one, from less than one to taking 4 or 5 a night, all of a sudden the Sixers look completely different. And then obviously it'd be intriguing. I more meant the Ben Simmons that we've seen playing good defense. We know what he's good at. Him doing that again, I don't know if I can survive it another season with the same Ben Simmons.
No, Tyra, that expressed my point very well, that in this world where we're sitting back a week from the offseason and imagining everything that can be, I just think that is at least one thing that is very intriguing to consider, if not something that you put very high odds on happening. That's all that I was meaning to say. But of course, yeah, the home run is Damian Lillard. And again, doesn't seem the most probable outcome, but it's going to be really fascinating to track how that all plays out with him and his saga this offseason and perhaps in years to come.
Man, the Sixers are in the mix, however you want to look at it. So there will be like an epilogue to this of how they did or did not get Damian Lillard. And we will be here documenting every step of it. We appreciate you listening to the Sixers Talk podcast brought to you by Wilmington University. WilmU works. For Ben Berry, our super producer, for Noah Levick, NBC Sports, Philadelphia.com, Sixers writer, and Ty Johnson, our special invited guest from Sixers Outsiders and the Mike Missanelli Show. We appreciate you listening here. I'm Danny Pommels. We'll see you next time.